Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. It's Susan King, and we're back where Genealogy and Spirit connect. It's another Tuesday, and believe it or not, we got a little sunshine after a few days of grayness here. In any event, I want to apologize that Summer and McStravick and Venus Andrecht are not here today. There was a medical emergency, and everything appears to be okay. They just haven't had any sleep. So in any event, we've got them tentatively rescheduled in a couple of weeks, and do know that our thoughts are with them for a very speedy recovery. But we've also made some minor changes to the schedule. And I want to introduce my guest today. His name is Rabbi Michael Zimmerman. He and I have met, about a month or two ago, Rabbi?
About a month ago, yes.
Yeah, I believe so. And in any event, he and I have been in dialogue because he got very interested when he heard about the topic of where genealogy and spirit connect. And I think that one of the topics of discussion that he and I have had over this month and some ideas that we've been batting around is really how to focus, religion into the whole concept of where genealogy and spirit connect. So in any event, we're going to have an interesting show. We will welcome call-ins. The number is 888-815-9756. If you have any questions for me or Rabbi Zimmerman, we'll be more than happy to take your calls. But Rabbi, you know, we talked about this and, you know, give me a little bit of background about how you got interested and maybe how we connected so that the audience can get a better idea of where we might be heading.
Okay, Susan, I'll try to give the capsule version of the story.
That'd be great.
I can't quite do the Twitter version, but at least the Facebook. My interest came at a point in my life where I had gotten very far from organized religion. For a number of years, I was heavily involved in Tibetan Buddhism, but for most of my adult life, I had gotten extremely far from the religion of my family, of Judaism. And I was living in the Netherlands. I was actually drawn to moving to Europe. My wife, who was my partner then, was from Germany, and I was certainly interested in going back to Europe, exploring my own heritage, my own background, especially after 1990 when places like Lithuania and Königsberg and places I had heard about from family history actually reemerged on the map as real places that you could find and visit. Anyway, at a certain point, after a number of years in the Netherlands, we attended a workshop together in Berlin. My mother is from Berlin, and this was a workshop in an approach called systematic family constellations developed by a German psychologist, Bert Hellinger. And it's a group process in which people will reenact aspects of one's personal history, mainly by looking at the generations in configuration, like the different members of a workshop. One will be your grandfather and your mother and your friend and you, and they all stand in configuration and try to play out areas of family history where there may be patterns that have led to whatever it is the reasons why one might seek help or greater insight. Now, in this case, I was the only person from a Jewish background there, and also the only person who wasn't from a German background. Who wasn't actually German or Swiss or Austrian. And when I told the story of my family, everybody there was in tears. You know, when I was telling that I had a maternal grandfather, who of course I never met, who had fought in the Kaiser's army, was disabled, later became very depressed, and did not leave when the rest of the family left for America, and eventually was taken to Theresienstadt, where he was killed. And in the midst of this very powerful work we were doing together, the person who was playing the role of my grandfather looked me in the eyes, and he said, do you have the courage to go back into the world of the Jewish man? And I thought about this. And based on this experience, my partner and myself spent a lot of time for the next few months doing intense genealogical research on my background, and made a trip around Eastern Europe. Certainly the most powerful moment of this trip for me was at Theresienstadt, where we went into the archives, did careful seeking of records to be able to find out whatever we could about my grandfather. We could figure out from these records that within a certain window of time, he was buried in a mass grave site in this huge open field near the crematorium.
Mm-hmm.
Walking through this field, I had this spiritual sense of where he must have been buried. I could feel it in my feet. I could feel it in the energy of the place. And
wow.
I sat in meditation for a long time in this place and eventually got the message to look around this field and to know that these are my people and that it was my work to be there for these people and for Jews and non-Jews alike who were buried in this place, and to develop and to work for reconciliation, forgiveness, and understanding.
Wow.
Well, this was really the beginning of the path that led to my being where I am now as a congregational rabbi. So for me, this link between spirituality and genealogy is, I mean, to me, they're inseparable and have played at this moment and at other times in my life just this very powerful shaping role in who I am and what my purpose is. And increasingly, that's what I'm hoping I can be working with more with my congregants and the people with whom I'm in contact.
You know, that is such a powerful story, and I get goosebumps when I hear about these things. And, you know, I mean, I've had some of the same kind of experiences when
right.
I've been in some of the killing fields all over Eastern Europe, and it is... even though they aren't even my relatives, you know, you just can't help but sense the spirit and the you know, the spirit of those souls. I mean, it's just an incredible experience. And you know, and to have it, you know, take you to such lengths where, you know, we've talked about, you know, the whole religion, you know, aspect of things. And you know, you know, I think I mentioned to you when we talked not too long ago, you know, that, you know, while I'm as Jewish as they come, I think, I have not, you know, practiced in any organized religion,
sure.
During pretty much my, since I got out of college. And, you know, in thinking about it, and I think in our discussion over, you know, last time, you know, we talked about the way spirituality had somehow kind of disappeared out of organized religion, and in some cases, and you know, that if you look back into where the whole religion came from, it all came really from the whole spirituality of and the spiritual side of life. So I don't know if you want to address that a little bit too, because I mean, what we're talking about here is not just Judaism and not just someone who
no.
is of Jewish faith. I mean, this is really, I think, the friends that I have here, I mean, I have a lot of friends who were raised Catholic, and they've are experiencing some of the same feelings that I've experienced. So I think that you know, one of the things that has happened is that the whole religious movement has somehow lost some of the spirituality, and you know, can we address that?
Yeah, it's it's good you bring that up, because this is a very strange thing. I mean, what are we doing? What is religion all about if it's not about our connection with what is beyond ourselves, our connection with the divine, and our connection with the full potential of who we are and what's our place in the universe? I mean, one would just assume this is the whole raison d'etre, this is the whole reason we have religion. And yet we're living in this very strange time when more and more people are saying, I have completely moved away from religion, but I'm a very spiritual person, that we have
right.
This split. I played it out that, like many in my generation, I'd gotten away from Judaism and found myself heavily involved in another religious tradition, with Buddhism. And at a certain point, saying, well, wait a second here. Why are there all these people from Jewish backgrounds, from Catholic backgrounds, from Presbyterian, Episcopal backgrounds, who are delving into Eastern religions, into Native American, into shamanistic traditions, goddess traditions? What is it that we've left behind? How could it possibly, that which we're seeking, that which we're finding, how could it possibly not be inherent in our own traditions? And I think this is a time when we're beginning to reclaim that. I mean, some of us who are working in theology, who are working actually in the various religious movements, are basically doing religious genealogy. We're tracing back into the deep ancestry of our own traditions, and we're trying to look at it not from the, should we say, the party line perspectives of what's true and what's acceptable and what's heretical, etc., but more what were all the different strains and the tapestry of what got us to where we are today. And of course, every religious tradition is this treasure trove of great spiritual insights from many different cultures.
And, you know, one of the things, too, that I mentioned to you that just has me totally buffaloed, and I think I've written about it in some of my articles on The Examiner, is that you look at, you know, I mean, you've got the, you know, the Muslim and the Jewish, you know, faction that's basically fighting against each other. But when you really look at the religious beliefs and the practices, is that they have such similarities. And in fact, all of them have similarities to a point. And we, you know, it really comes down in my, you know, in my spiritual belief that, you know, somehow we've got to bridge some of these gaps, because, you know, the prayers in the Quran versus the prayers in the Torah, you know, say the same things, just a slightly different way.
Well, the Torah, of course, was composed many, many centuries before the time of Muhammad, maybe a millennium before the time of Muhammad. And yet, one of the elements in Torah, certainly in Genesis, is, again, this genealogical piece of it.
Right.
That Ishmael was the brother of Isaac. They were both the sons of Abraham. And that in the Genesis narratives, you have the origins of all the different peoples within the surrounding area, most of whom can trace very close ancestry to one another. And there is this funny play, this tension between Isaac and Ishmael, and later between Jacob and Esau, this very complicated love-hate, where the tension is clearly between two sides of a family that are having trouble getting along because they're so closely bound to another. They're the same blood. They have so much in common that there's this sibling rivalry. And of course, now the sibling rivalry is being played out in, you know, these horrible, horrible, tragic struggles between the one side of the family and another side of the family, where basically we have so much that we share.
Yes, like we all are, you know, human beings, and as I always said, is that we all take the same journey from birth as the beginning to death as a destination, and the journey of life, and we all cross these paths pretty much the same way. It doesn't matter, you know, where we live. The journey is what really is different and that makes us who we are. But at the very end of this day, there is nothing different between you or me or anybody in Iraq or Afghanistan or whatever. And, you know, this sibling rivalry, as you call it, which is, you know, kind of a great way to define what we're going through. You know, I mean, we live this in our own lives, you know, with our own siblings in some cases. In some cases, there are, you know, siblings that spend their lives not talking to each other for, you know, sometimes for a long period of time, sometimes forever. And, you know, it really goes back to this whole, I think, the whole spirituality of genealogy. And I guess back to where my topic came up about a year or so ago, when it just dawned on me that, you know, there is quite a connect here between spirituality and genealogy. And that, as you and I discussed, I have this firm belief in, you know, in changing the world, I guess, maybe, that maybe genealogy could be used as a modality to help bring peace and understanding and tolerance to this world, because something's got to happen. And when you start looking deep into your own personal roots and your own ancestry, as you've done and as I've done and as millions of people have done, there is a soul journey there that I don't think any of us don't take that walk. And, you know, maybe there is a way to bridge these gaps. My thoughts, your thoughts.
Well, it's scary territory, of course, because we human cruelty. We know it well when we're the victims of it. We shriek in horror when we read about, when we see, when we witness what one human being can do to another. But as we look into ourselves, and especially if we look into ourselves as the bearer of this legacy from generation to generation of you know, what we carry, it's all right there. And there are two ways we can look at that. One is what we usually do is if it's too painful to face in ourselves, we will project that out on the other one and say, look at what they're doing to me. Look what they're doing to other people. This is horrible. It's not acceptable. The real spiritual path, the courageous work, involves looking inside and owning it and saying, oh my goodness, here's this. What I've seen out there, it's in me. I have done it. I mean, maybe I haven't destroyed other human beings with my own hands, but how did I relate to my sister? When I threw a tantrum against my parents, what kind of language did I use? What kind of thoughts were going in my head at that time? Because it's all right there, and we learn it from one another. If we look at if we look into our own stories, what maybe happened to us in infancy, maybe what our parents have done to us, and then see how do we treat our own children, how this is carried on. The book of Exodus has the it has an interesting way of dealing with this. In a very famous passage that we describe as the 13 attributes of God, it plays a very important part, especially in the High Holiday liturgy, where God tells Moses something about, you can't see my face, but something you need to know about me. First of all, I will bestow kindness and blessing on people to the thousandth generation, but the curse, the guilt, the responsibility will be carried on for the next three generations. I mean, it's really very positive in that way, that it's 1,000 to 3, the good stuff to the bad stuff.
Right.
But still, that what's carried on for the from the first to the second to the third generation, probably by that time has been repeated, so it'll then go on to the fourth to the fifth to the sixth. If we don't turn it around in some way, is often not very pretty.
No, it's not. And you know, one of the things that I learned, and I guess part of my journey and through genealogy was, not unlike many young girls. I mean, I had a very love-hate relationship with my mother. Mm. And, more I've talked to people about this. I mean, I'm not the only one. I mean, I loved her to death. And she loved me to death. But, there were some issues that we would definitely have some major clashes on. But one of the things that I learned when I first started my genealogy and my genealogy work is that, by going back and seeing how my mother was raised and, really where she was coming from and, what was going on during the time of, her life, and then taking it back the next generation and, finding out how, life was and what was going on and what socioeconomic and political events were going on. And, you start to learn a little bit about forgiveness. And that, that I think is probably was the biggest lesson that I learned when I first started doing this, is I learned to forgive. And that she was who, my mother was who she was because of how she was brought up. And she was who she was because of how her mother was brought up. And you start to look at the dynamics of the families and the dynamics of things and the way life was, and the picture becomes very clear. And I know that the minute I practiced forgiveness, she and I became closer than we ever were in our lives. And it was a very powerful, powerful thing. And genealogy taught me that.
Right.
I don't know if I would have ever gotten to that point if I hadn't really started to focus on, trying to find out why she was who she was. Because in so doing, I was actually trying to find out who I was.
Sure.
And it's a very interesting modality, I think, to, really learning more about self. But by learning about self, you literally learn about your lineage and those people, and you learn to forgive, because what would you have done if you were put in some of the situations that some of our ancestors were put in, and would you have always made the right choice? Is there a right choice? Is there a way to right a wrong? I mean, these are all questions that come up, that it was a mind-boggling journey that I started on 27 years ago. And it's even more mind-boggling for me today, because the more and more I get into this whole spiritual side of things, and I start to learn more, because granted, growing up in a Jewish household, my mother was spiritual, but I mean, we really never had the kind of teachings that I think that you see on some of the spiritual websites today. And you know, it gets back to the point that you know, it pretty much surpasses religion as far as believing in, you know, in spirit. I mean, and that we all are spirit, and that we all come from one source, and we go back to, I guess, the Bible and Genesis.
You told me earlier I can ask you questions as well.
Yes,
and I'm,
you sure can.
I'm curious for you. How do you make the separation between religion and spirituality? What is each one for you?
You know, I take religion from a perspective of the whole organization. I mean, I don't believe when I was growing up, when I went to synagogue, and it could have been where I went, what I did, you know, I don't really feel that I felt that spiritual meeting with God there. I felt I was getting, you know, I was memorizing prayers that meant nothing to me. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's so much, Eric. It's so much of our experience of so many of us, and it's so ironic considering what the words of those prayers and the intention behind them. But
More to me now, even though I don't, you know, say them as often than they did to me then. I will tell you probably the most spiritual experiences that I had going to synagogue was at age 5. And I can go back to those days. And it was right after my grandfather passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And my first real spiritual experience was, you know, my parents left out in the middle of the night. My grandfather had a heart attack. They got in the car. They drove all night to Savannah. They woke me up and left me with this babysitter who I did not care for that much. And, you know, told me that, you know, Poppy had gone to heaven. And I got up the next morning, and I vaguely remember that I was told something in my sleep, and I went outside and I sat on the curb, and I actually remember exactly the spot I sat, and I remember looking up in the sky, and I remember seeing Poppy in the clouds, and he talked to me, and he's talked to me ever since. I mean, it's been, you know, kind of nutsy, but ever since then, that loss of his, even though I always felt that I had a spirit around me, I have had a terrible problem going into synagogue and, you know, doing the Kaddish. And, you know, I would cry for all the people that would stand up who were mourning, and I can't do it. I had the empathy for that loss and that feeling, and it's a very strange thing, and it's, I don't know how to tell you, but, you know, that's when I think I connected with spirit, is when I connected with my grandfather after he passed. And while I had dabbled in the spirituality stuff when I was in my early 20s, I scared myself to death with it, and, you know, I just went on my merry way, and I just reconnected a couple of years ago. After my near-death experience. So the spirituality to me is I guess love and light, and, you know, in the organized religion, I don't sense that. I don't sense the love, and I don't sense the light. Does that make sense?
Oh, well, it certainly resonates with my experience and was the experience of a lot of people. Whether it makes sense or not is another question, because it's kind of crazy in a way, because what are we doing this for? And it's this funny irony. I mean, in the Torah this week, we just read the story of the Tower of Babel. and it's the story of people, you know, who out of this devotion to God wanted to build this monument to God, and God somehow, and at least the God character in the story, instead of being what we would expect, you know, from like the opening of opportunity, felt threatened, and said, "Oh dear, if all these people were able to really build this tower, you know, then they would threaten the authority of the angels and everything." And so God created this chaos of different languages, so people could no longer talk to each other, so that we couldn't really come together. And there's a sense, and that this is the root of like so much of the symbolically of much of the alienation that we experience. Well, that to me, the Tower of Babel story represents what happens when we go from revelation or very deep insight or spiritual experience or connection with the divine to creating a structure that's going to house that and give it form and be able to preserve it for generations and make it accessible to large numbers of people. You have, what do you have? You have hierarchies, you have authorities, you have people who are trying to hold on to their roles, you have a need to disempower the masses and put the direct revelatory experience out of reach for them. And it doesn't matter what religious tradition you're talking about. And many of them originated in reaction to other traditions where this was happening to make sure that it didn't happen. But then they started to do it. And the Tower of Babel story blames God for it. But I think if I were to rewrite that story, if I had the chutzpah to do that...
I think you should.
Yeah, I probably should. I would not put the burden on God. I would somehow rewrite it that it's the people themselves who, in their zeal and enthusiasm, each one to get to the top first or, you know, to show that their little section in the tower would be the most grand and gracious, created the sense of alienation and the need for control and authority and hierarchy.
You know, last week, Dr. Roger Wolger and I had a, you know, really very interesting chat on, you know, past life regression and some of the deep memory process that he works with, which, you know, may be similar to Bert Hellinger. But in any event, one of the things that, you know, I just spurted out, which might even be a very interesting topic, is, you know, we've got this internet that has the capability of pulling everybody back together again. And, you know, maybe that is, you know, God's way of giving us the tools that we need to bridge these gaps, you know, if we can use it properly. You know, that's a whole nother story for another day, having been on the side of people not using it properly. But,
yeah,
you know, I mean, we do have some incredible tools open to us today. And I guess, you know, if you think about it, you know, we may be in a big test here.
Yeah, I hope in talking to you more I'll be able to latch on to some of your optimism on this one. It sounds great. I mean, the first thing I think of is how we are being tested right now. And I mean, look what's happened in the last 15, 20 years on the net, that, you know, now that we have been virused and hijacked and we needed to develop more and more elaborate security systems to guard us against ourselves, so that now we can't even receive email from one another because half of the messages get screened in the spam filter because we have become such masters at using it for devious and divisive purposes that the internet can be an open channel to certainly the the highest wisdom, the most unifying teachings, but also for hate propaganda, for perpetuating rumors, and fears. I mean, I'm wondering, like, what happened in Afghanistan last week. You know, when there were riots, when people were accusing Westerners of burning a copy of the Quran, which clearly, you know, this was a rumor that was stirred up to flame hatred. But you know, you see it there in beautiful type and print, and truth becomes very slippery. I mean, I'm sure that Holocaust deniers have been able to gain a lot of support by putting, you know, this rather atrocious nonsense into cyberspace. So yeah, I think the positive potential of what we've got on the web, on the net, is enormous. But it's like anything else, it's going to be a reflection of who we are as human beings in the best and the worst sense. So it's going to take a lot of discrimination.
Right, and that's what I mean is that it is a test for us to see if we can, you know, manage ourselves as people, as human beings, or if we use it to destroy ourselves. I mean, I mean, you know, it's definitely been put there to test our abilities. I see
yeah.
it that way.
When Facebook asks me, what are you thinking at this moment, what do you want to write about at this moment, and then blip, I put it out there, I press the little button and stuff, it's there, and you know, a moment later I said, oh my goodness,
right,
that
I want that out.
Is, well, it's there.
It is, and you know, in some respect, and I mean, you know, I've been twittering a little bit myself, not a whole lot because. I don't know, I just don't seem to have the time at this moment to, you know, just do that. But,
you know,
one of the things that I have seen, and some of the benefits to it, are that you do get to see through, I guess, people. I guess, yeah, and I don't mean see through, but you really get to a better gist of who somebody might really be and what their interests really are and why they're interested in certain things. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, it becomes a different way of learning. And I think that it does have some positive power.
Oh, sure.
While I'm sure it has some very negative power too.
I just had this little moment now of humility. I mean, saying I'm giving my rant against the internet, and I realize, hey, here I'm speaking to one of the pioneers who has really put this tool to incredibly good and beneficial use. And interestingly enough, doing that by creating a platform in which we can simply share the facts of, you know, who we are and where we came from on a massive scale and make that information accessible.
It was pretty interesting, isn't it? I mean, you know,
yeah.
those are, yeah, sometimes I think, Rabbi, we're guided to do things, and I don't know what my guidance was at those moments. I just know that, you know, I had a personal need at that point in my life, and I was in my early to mid-30s, I think. And I had a need to learn more about myself. And, you know, the whole genealogy world, when it opened up to me as a means, which was quite an accident, as it turned out,
mm-hmm.
You know, that the Jewish Gen that I founded was kind of just the bigger accident. I mean, you know, there was no planning, no models, no nothing for anything. It was just built on, you know, a personal need to learn and understand and get a better understanding of my family and where they came from, and in so doing about me. And I had no idea. I mean, you know, it started off, and I just, it was you know, one of those crazy ventures that you have absolutely no idea that you know, where you're going with it or how you're doing it and what you're really doing. It just kind of took off on its own. It was, you know, as some people say, it was being in the right place at the right time with the right medium, I think. With a need. And, that's how, you know, things get born. I mean, I'm on another journey here, this last year, you know, built on a need, my need, you know, a platform and a medium and, you know, an opportunity to, help guide people into, you know, into genealogy with the spirituality in mind, because, you know, we talked about this in our phone conversation, and one of the things that I've been learning as I have embarked on this spiritual journey most recently in the last 2 years, that a lot of what is discussed in the concept of spirituality rather than the concept of religion goes back to ancient times. I mean, it goes back to ancient Greece. It goes back to the Roman times. I mean, it goes back and back and back. And you know, I mean, I've been actually reading a little bit, what, you know, sad to say, about this thing with James Arthur Ray in Sedona. And, you know, he was practicing a very ancient Native American ritual that, you know, in all practical purposes, from what I'm reading, was not done right. But, you know, I mean, we keep, you know, everything that I'm seeing from the spiritual community really goes back to the beliefs of ancient times and, you know, the synchronicities of life. You know, I one of the most intriguing synchronistic events that I had was when I was in Greece about a year ago. And I'd gone up to, with some of my friends, so we were sailing the Greek islands. But we had gone up to Delphi, and I had made my prayer to the oracles of Delphi. I mean, you know, as everybody does. And my prayer was for some guidance on what I should do with my life. You know, I mean, I was looking for guidance. And we went back to the hotel, and we were sitting up at the bar on top of the hotel overlooking the Parthenon. And we're sitting there having a drink, and out of the corner of my eye, I see this thing floating overhead. And it's coming from the Parthenon right towards us. Well, for those who know me, I have two Dalmatians, so I'm a Dalmatian lover. Would you know that it was a balloon of a Dalmatian? Now, how synchronistic is that, you know, that it would fly over my head in Greece, over the Parthenon, you know, and it would be a Dalmatian? And, you know, it was then and there that I thought to myself, okay, my prayers are going to be answered. I'm going to be guided. And you know what? It happened. So, you know, these, yeah, and we're going back to ancient oracles. I mean, you know, they say that, you know, people would go in those ancient times, they'd go up to the top of the mountain and they'd say their prayers, and then they'd walk the streets and they'd overhear conversations, and somebody would either say something to them, and it would, you'd have that aha moment. And, you know, even synchronistic events today, I mean, you know, walking down the street, overhearing a conversation, watching something on the news, you know, you've been thinking about something, and all of a sudden something comes up and you say, my goodness, isn't that odd? It's not odd, you know, it's just only odd if you're not open to it. And
you know what this? You know what this is sparking for me in my own story. You know, this period when I was living in Europe, I was particularly fascinated by Gothic cathedrals, many of which, you know, from what I was reading, were built on places where two underground streams would come together, where especially ancient Catholic people would have had healing shrines. And very often the most powerful thing in the cathedral, I mean, besides magnificence of the structure themselves, would be like a shrine of the Virgin Mary that had healing power. And so I would sometimes go and sit in meditation at these places and ask myself, what's a nice Jewish boy doing in a place like this? You know, why was I so fascinated by that? It didn't make any sense. And I love going, I didn't make it to Stonehenge, but to wherever we went and on the continent where there'd be like some of the megalithic sites, the dolmens and these, you know, I was just totally entranced by it. And the cave art in southern France and the like, why am I so entranced by this? I couldn't figure it out. Well, last year I got DNA testing, and you know, I sort of figured, because for my genealogy work, I mean, I was just solid Ashkenazi Jewish back on all sides as far back as we could trace it.
Right.
And you know, the Y DNA, I believe, is R1B, 1B2, something like that, and the mitochondrial was H1. Both of them are like the most common genealogic haplogroups of Western Europeans, and particularly traced like to the Cro-Magnon and the people who did the cave art in the Pyrenees in that area. And then I began to ask myself, well, you know, sure, on the one hand, I have this very strong Jewish heritage, and it is in my blood. And as I go back in my spiritual, my meditative work, there are these other cross currents that have come in, and that they have also left very powerful marks. And it does seem that if one follows a religious tradition, but if you go deeply enough into the esoteric side, into the meditative and the spiritual disciplines within Judaism, Catholicism, and any of the major ancient traditions, one will usually get to a place where those boundaries and those borders become much more fluid than kind of like the math religion that you get in the churches and synagogues.
Right. Well, you know, I didn't mention to you, and I don't know, I tell this story not very frequently, but it is kind of, it's a funny story, I guess, but it may also explain a little bit about where my head is. I have the same experience in Catholic churches. Probably some of the most powerful experiences I've had was in the Sacré-Cœur in Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat there for hours and hours and hours, and I mean, I just felt healed for whatever it was that I needed at that particular time. It was just some incredible experiences. But going back to my childhood, we had a live-in maid at the time. This was in southern Louisiana, New Orleans, and I was an only child at the time, and on Sunday mornings, I'd wake up very early, and my parents would still be sleeping, and the housekeeper would literally grab me in tow and take me to St. Rita's Church for Mass, because she didn't want to leave me up alone at the house. So I do this, I guess, for 5 years, as long as I can remember. And when I reached the age of being able to go to Sunday school, I'd go to church and then I'd go to Sunday school. And it wasn't until one Ash Wednesday when I came back from church early in the morning with ashes on my forehead that my mother actually knew what had happened. I didn't know there was anything wrong with it. I didn't really see any disconnect at all, personally. So, I spent most of my childhood and my formative years from age 5 to about 8 or 9, doing a double whammy, going to Mass on Sunday mornings, coming home, having breakfast with my parents, and then getting in a carpool and going to Sunday school. with nobody's knowledge.
And we're at this interesting time in religious history where there is so much cross-fertilization going on. And Jewish world, from the surveys they've taken, there's something like at least 50% Jewish intermarriage. Catholic Protestant intermarriage is not unusual. Our pre-modern religious structures and hierarchies were not built to accommodate this. They don't quite fit anymore. Things were set up as they were for a reason, but this is a different time, and its needs are different. And so we all in the religious world are wrestling with these tensions. I was just at an interfaith conference last week looking at issues of how the three major world religions are confronting the realities of modernity. It's a big and a fascinating question, and it's scary. It's scary territory because basic guiding principles that have kept the glue of our ancestral traditions together are now being challenged. If we go a few generations back, and if one's child would marry outside the faith of a Jewish family, their parents would mourn them for dead.
Right.
And now we're suddenly at a time where there's this very complicated cross fertilization where our congregations are being enriched by people who have either converted or married into Jewish families who are bringing very different values, very different perspectives. The children in our religious school are being exposed to the traditions of their different families. It provides some enormous challenges for religious organizations and denominations, but also if we can grasp it in a creative way, amazing opportunities.
Right.
We might actually all eventually learn to live together.
It would be really quite a feat, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and too. I mean, you know, I think that the whole spirituality. I mean. Yeah, I looked, since I have two primary interests in my life, and that's genealogy and spirituality. And I looked at these two industries a year ago, and both of them are booming.
Mm-hmm.
Booming.
Yeah.
Now, they're both booming on the Internet, you know, and the Internet has had quite, in my opinion, an opportunity to really be a medium for both of these, you know, these two industries. But, you know, both of them are booming. And there's obviously a reason for that. And I think that the whole spiritual side of religion, from the organized religion perspective, somehow, I think, has gotten lost. And you and I talked about this. I don't know how fluid you want me to go with it, but, you know, I think that it became more of a social, political structure within the organized religion and the whole concept of the congregations and the, oh my God, you know, there were things that I saw personally that, you know, didn't sit well with me because it didn't sit spiritually with me. It was like some of the people in the same congregations were, you know, hurting other members of their own congregations, and that upset me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
And that upset me to no end. And, I mean, you know...
Sure, we were educated in our families of how we relate to one another, and that comes out.
And you see it within the whole organized religion. Now, you know, I haven't, you know, the spiritual side of things has been pretty much internet-based for me, so I haven't had the opportunity, you know, that the, where there's that one-on-one every week or, you know, once a week or whenever, you know, the congregations get together, to experience that. I guess in any structure, whether it's religious or not, you're going to find this.
Sure. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's, a particular organization that encourages people to develop astral projection and regress into their past lives, or you know, a meditation society, or as you've told me, a Jewish gen itself. It's in the nature of organizations that come together that people bring the best and the worst of who they are into those organizations, and the Tower of Babel is repeated once again.
You keep going back to this Tower of Babel. You may even have me intrigued enough to go read this again, because I don't know if I remember that story. But I'm getting intrigued enough where I think I might want to go back and reread that. But, you know, this exists in everything, and it's just amazing to me sometimes how, you know, how the most quote-unquote religious people can be the biggest hypocrites. I don't know any other way to say this. I mean, you know, I've been dealing with a situation recently on a debt that I've been trying to collect, and you know, I mean, it's someone that goes to church every Sunday, and the writing on the wall of the pictures I see is "Do unto others as you would have them do unto you." And Lordy be,
I think one thing the world of global mass communications, internet and the like is doing is that there's a lot of witnessing and feedback that's coming back to us very quickly right now. And I'm still thinking about what you said before about, you know, this enormous interest in genealogy and in spirituality in this time. I think that couldn't be more true, because people, on the one hand, they're seeking the roots of, like, you know, who they are, and on the deeper level, they're seeking, you know, what is their place in the cosmos? You know, what is the meaning and purpose of their lives? These are two fundamental religious questions. And it's really like holding, now that I'm in the religious world, it's really like holding a big mirror up us, and we can measure our success and failure, by the degree to which people are finding this within our religious institutions, or the degree to which they're seeking elsewhere. And frankly, I think the report card, the grade that comes out, is not very not very glowing a lot of the time. But I also know, being involved, and certainly in a movement that I'm very excited to be and honored to be a part of right now, that there's a lot of good stuff happening. And, you know, I'm seeing it, you know, in my dialogue with Christian colleagues and people from other traditions as well. There's a lot of, you know, I hope people can forgive and give us a second chance, because there's a lot of potential, which I think is beginning to start to be tapped within the religious institutions once again.
And, yeah, I think people would welcome that. I truly do. You know, just as an aside, you know, you and I are getting ready, we hope, right? We're still kind of working on the precepts.
Well, that's been a plug, yes.
but, you know, we do want to start engaging people in some dialogue about, you know, the whole concept of spirituality, genealogy, and religion. I think it affects all of us as far as our ancestry goes. It affects all of us as our soul journey goes, and it affects all of us in how we relate spiritually to ourselves and to the divine. And I think that this discourse that we hope to be generating on www.susanekeking.com here soon with Rabbi Zimmerman and hopefully some colleagues of his from other representative religions and beliefs and some people from the spiritual community and people from the genealogy community. I'm looking forward to it. I think it can be a very exciting way to have people begin to start thinking in terms of threes instead of onesies and twosies.
Yeah, I'm excited about it too, and I think I'm really hoping we can bring in people from as many traditions as possible and really open up some exciting exploration discussion.
I think so. So, stay tuned, folks. This we hope will be launching here soon, and we brought Rabbi Zimmerman on just a little bit earlier than we had intended because of the change in plans, but hopefully we'll be able to launch that really soon. Rabbi, thank you. It has been also enlightening. I'm going to go read the story about the Tower of Babel as soon as I can, because I am intrigued with that concept.
Well, it's
and
very
I
short.
Thank you for joining me on such short notice. Boy, that is a tongue twister if I ever heard one. And
my pleasure.
It has
thank
been
you for
absolutely delightful.
Me,
so thanks again. Next week, folks, Shelley Dardashti is going to be joining me. She is probably one of the leading bloggers in the genealogy field. Her probably most renowned is her Tracing the Tribe blog. We're going to be talking about some interesting topics as far as Sephardic Judaism and some of the DNA projects that are going on for Iberian Ashkenaz. And it's going to be kind of a new eye-opener for everybody, I think, because I hate to say this, but a lot of us go back to the Inquisition and Spanish roots no matter what we think. In any event, Shelley is a specialist in Persian genealogy, too, so it's going to be a very interesting hour, and I'm looking forward to it. So, folks, been a great hour. Thanks to you, Rabbi Zimmerman, and we will see you next Tuesday, where genealogy and spirit connect.